Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the podcast where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. No set schedule, just whenever I finish a book, I review it and stick it up here on the podcast feed. It's been a little bit since I reviewed the last book, mainly because I've just taken my time over this last book, The Use of Weapons by Ian M. Banks, and also because I've actually made a bit more progress on my own science fiction novella or whatever it's going to turn out to be. I'm not entirely sure of the length of the book quite yet, but I've put a bit more work into that, which is quite cool. A little bit of feedback from everyone. I asked it the last episode that I recorded, which is a bit of a longer episode. I didn't keep an eye on the clock all the way through. I just talked as long as I wanted to, and it seems like it went down pretty well. 100% of everyone who emailed in said, yes, I like the longer episode. Although that was only 5 people who actually emailed in about it. So if you like it, keep emailing in if you like the longer episode. And if you don't like it, I want to hear from you, because I guess people who don't like the podcast just stopped listening halfway through and didn't get to the end with me asking people to email in. Or maybe they just unsubscribed from iTunes. So maybe that's what's happening on there. So let's get on to the book for today. Use of Weapons by Ian M. Banks. He's one of my favourite science fiction authors, also just one of my generally one of my favourite authors, because he doesn't just write science fiction books. He actually writes books in turn. So as Ian Banks, he writes just a normal non-science fiction book, which I've read quite a few of them. And then he writes under the name of Ian M. Banks, with an M in his name, and he writes science fiction books. And I actually first started reading his science fiction book years and years and years ago. I actually consider Phlebas, which is his first science fiction book, set in the Culture universe, which same as Use of Weapons there. And I read it quite early on, I guess, in my science fiction reading my reading life. I managed to then keep up with all of his other books and read them all in order as he wrote them, which was pretty cool. The last book I read of his, was the book, what was it, The Algebrist, that he wrote maybe 2004, 2005, can't remember. And it was all right, a lot of fun. A bit silly, because there's this like big twist at the end. And the big twist at the end, or the big mystery that you're wanting to find out, or what the main character is trying to find out, is written in the prologue, or in like the very first 2 pages of the first chapter of the book. And all the way through, I was thinking, why isn't he just like following the instructions that he was given at the beginning? But he doesn't. And then at the end, it's meant to be surprising. So a bit of a silly book. I was ultimately disappointed with that. I thought it was one of his weakest science fiction books. And then there's a new book which just came out this year called Matter, but I've not read that yet, mainly because it's not been released here in English, in Germany, in paperback. So it's like 25 euros. And I'm not really going to pay 25 euros for a novel when I have so many other books to read at the same time. So let's get on to this. The Culture universe, I guess, is interesting. That's what this book is set in. I guess if you know Ian M. Banks, you'll know The Culture. But just a quick update for anyone who's never read any of Ian M. Banks' books before. The Culture is a galaxy-spanning civilization, mainly made up of, like, typically humanoid beings, but also other alien beings as well, and they all live in what Banks calls a post-scarcity society. So anyone can live in as much luxury as they want, and they can live on spaceships or on rings or on rocks, or some people even live on planets, although they're, like, considered quite wasteful in sort of, like, the matter to usable surface area ratio, which is an interesting way of looking at the universe, I guess. Anyway, people have also modified themselves, and they can live as long as they want to, and they can change their physical being just by thinking hard about it. So if they're male, they can just think hard, and sort of like slowly change into male or female to male, and they can grow taller and shorter and change their appearance any way they want to as well. Also, there's no laws. So if you want something, you don't have to steal it. You can just ask, and it'll be built for you very quickly because, you know, the computer minds, or the ship's minds, as I say, can pretty much build you anything that you want. And if you even want your own solar system or your own planet, you can have it. Although people say, why would you ever want one of these? You know, everything that you can have, you can have. And if you kill someone, like, you're not punished in any way. You're just told not to do it again, and they assign a drone to you, so you're followed around, and that'll stop you from killing anyone ever again, which is quite an interesting way of looking at things. Also, yeah, like I said before, there's ships' minds and stations' minds, and they're sort of self-aware supercomputers, and they pretty much run things, make sure everything runs smoothly. And as well as that, I guess, not so pertinent to this book, but there's smaller drones which have more human-like intelligences and human capabilities, or human-level capabilities. They don't look anything like humans. They're mainly sort of briefcase size and shapes boxes which sort of float around on force fields and control things through force fields. So the culture is widely spread throughout the galaxy. Let's just narrow it down a bit to what this book talks about. But on the edge of the sort of culture's like influence, there's many, many other civilizations in systems and clusters and single planets. And there's this organization called Contact, which contacts these other civilizations, normally not in a very blatant way. They sort of try to subtly influence the other civilization to sort of speed up their moral and societal and technological process, maybe, if you could call it that, and sort of then slowly introduce them to the ideals of the culture, and then introduce them to the culture. And then if your population or the planet or the civilization wants to join in with the culture, they can. Or if not, they can just get on better with the culture and not be too disruptive in their little corner of the solar system. And within Contact, this organisation within the culture, is another organisation within Contact. It's called Special Circumstances, and this is sort of like the Secret Service or the police force of the culture. And they're used if the culture's relationships with other civilizations breaks down somewhat, and sort of more extreme methods are needed to sort of sway events in this other civilization into the culture's best interests, even though the methods that Special Circumstances uses are normally entirely against the ethic that the culture is all about in the first place. So it's a very strange thing. It's sort of like, we're going to go in and promote democracy, and we're going to use warfare to promote democracy. Yeah, it's like right there, sort of like maybe like one of the themes of these books is a mention or sort of like a parallel to America's role in the world at the moment, although, you know, probably isn't just about that, but that's certainly hints of it are in all of the culture books, or especially the ones that deal with Special Circumstances. The thing is, the culture's minds and their sort of biological, like human operatives, they pride themselves in honoring the freedoms and the will of others. For example, a ship's mind can read a human's mind at will, but they choose not to. And a human Special Circumstances agent is so far advanced in their skill, they've got access to so much technology, they can take on any enemy that they want, but they choose not to. Instead, they take less direct measures. And the way they do this is often they recruit mercenaries from outside of the culture, from civilizations outside of the culture, to come in and do the dirty work for them. And this book follows, Use of Weapons follows one such mercenary called Zakalvi, or however you pronounce his name. And he was born into a noble family on a random world, and he fought well in some wars on his home world and his own sort of own cluster, in his own civilization. And Special Circumstances, an agent there called Dizit Sma, she spotted him, thought, hey, he's good, and recruited him into the culture. And Dizit Sma, she also makes an appearance in some other culture books, especially the short stories collection called State of the Art. So, yeah, that's it, really. That's the setup. That's the universe that we're in here, following Zakalvi. Oh, yeah, and the book's called Use of Weapons. Lots of weapons are used in this book, but my reading of it is that Zakalvi, this mercenary, this military commander that's recruited by Special Circumstances, he is the weapon that is being used. Although there's other meanings that could be read into it, especially if you read the very, very end of the book itself. Before I get more into the story, I've got to really mention the structure of the book, because this is quite important. There's two timelines here, and they're told every other chapter. One story runs forward in time, from when Dizit Sma is told she has to go and like meet up with Zakalvi and convince him to work with the culture again, because he's been taking a break for a while. And these chapters are like titled 1, 2, 3, and they run forward in time. But between these chapters, every other chapter here, is another story. And these chapters are called like X, IX, IIX, VIII, whatever it is, Roman numerals, running in reverse. They run backwards in time. I mean, the chapters aren't written backwards in time, but each chapter is set before the previous chapter in this timeline that runs backwards. And the first is Zakalvi working on his own outside of the culture, doing his own sort of like Special Circumstances work, freelance, if you will. And then there's a series of Zakalvi doing jobs for the culture and not enjoying it. And then one about him like being a hermit and living on a remote beach. And then one about him falling in love. And they work backwards through his story all the way back until the time when he's a child and he's living on his parents' estate, and he's fighting back there in his home system, I guess, on his home planet where he comes from. I'm not spoiling anything here, because there's a number of milestones early on in his life that are sketched out early on in the book as well. Because you follow his life backwards, but there's within these backwards chapters, there's also flashbacks even further back in time. So it can get a little bit complex. But by following his life backwards, you get a very intense journey into his mind and into his experience. Because if the same story had just been told forward, the impact of each event wouldn't be the same. Because you see his attitude, you see how he lives, you see what he wants to do. And then you see, like in the next chapter, you see why he was acting like that in the previous chapter. And then you're shown the next event in his past that impacted him in this great way. And then the next event. And so you can concentrate on each part, and of course you're thinking, well, what's this big impact, like life-changing event at the very beginning of his life that's sort of hinted at throughout there? Something to do with a chair, we're not quite what, but the chair symbolism is, well, not so much symbolism, like blatant references to how he doesn't like chairs of all the way through that. It's, you know, you think it's, yeah, it's something quite dark in his past, and it's blocked from his mind. And, of course, by the time you get to the end of the book, this is all revealed. And when I say it's dark, I mean it is, like, really, really dark. When I was first actually reading this, because I've read this book before a long, long time ago, and this is the second time I've read it. The first time, I didn't quite get it. I thought the sort of the backwards plot structure, it felt a bit gimmicky at first. But, you know, as I read through it, I understood what was going on. But still, at the end of the book, I didn't quite get everything. Now, the second time I've read through it, I realised that there's nothing gimmicky. I mean, it's slightly experimental, but there's nothing gimmicky about this this structure. Because the storytelling, the way he can weave, Ian M. Banks weaves these different stories is amazing, you know, the way that they go together, and the plot twists at the very end are worth it, you know, just to have this structure that's here. And they all have like a real impact on the story, these plot twists I'm talking about here, you know, because normally a plot twist is thrown at the end just to keep you reading, just to keep you guessing what's going through. But even if there wasn't a plot twist at the end, I would have been really happy with the book, you know, because it would have told his full story and that's it. But because of the plot twists at the end, it really makes you, like, look at the rest of the book that you've just read in a completely different light. Thankfully, the last time I read the book, I didn't quite remember, I didn't really work out everything that was going on. Some of the parts of the book were lost on me. So now, when I read it this time, after maybe 10 years or something, whenever I last found this book, I didn't have all of it cleared up in mind, so I could really read it again, almost fresh. Not really fresh, but almost fresh, and enjoy it very much, I guess, or a lot more than the previous time. So those are the backwards story, I guess. The forward story tells more of the story of the current state of war, or the states that they're trying to, the situation that they're trying to work out. Dizziet Smar is being told to convince Sakalvi into joining up with Special Circumstances again. And they need him because they need him to go to this, like a non-combat mission to a star cluster-sized civilization. And the aim is for him to find and convince this reclusive retired politician that he knew from a previous mission to this same place. And they want this retired politician to come back out of retirement and use his influence to stop an upcoming war. And if they can't stop the war, they want him to sort of swing it in favour of the good guys. Now, the cool thing is that you're never really quite sure who the good guys are, because sometimes Zakalwi is put into place by special circumstances, and he doesn't know if he's on the right side or the wrong side. He's just put in place to mix up events or influence events in some way, and he doesn't want to know beforehand. He just wants to, you know, do his job and tries to do his job. But this time you realise that the good guys in this book are those that think machine intelligence is a good thing, just like the culture, and also that space habitats are better than terraforming, which is also like the culture. And again, I'm looking at this, I'm thinking, is that all it takes for the culture to want to swing one way or the other? But there's very few black and white issues in this book, which I think is a good thing. It adds some depth, and you realise that the culture can be, you know, this whole sort of like the culture really thinks about this thing, and they really want to fight for this thing, but then to go about it, you know, to protect the terraforming of planets, they can blow up a planet, you know, because they've got so much energy in space. I don't know what it is there. So again, it's not really quite clear what the culture's, all of the culture's influences here, what they should be, or what their motives are as well. And the storyline, you actually get to know quite a few interesting characters in this storyline, because there's Dizziet Smar. She's quite a conflicted character. Again, she is like I think she's meant to reflect me as a reader, or us as readers, because at the beginning she like talks about, or her character sees some really, really horrific violence at real close quarters. And she's really sort of like horrified about this, and yet she's the one who deploys Zakalwi into these other situations. Zakalwi is her weapon, and she's like through him carrying out a lot more violence and a lot more deadly actions through Zakalwi. But it really does bring up those things like violence as a means to an end. Is it okay about it? I mean, that's what it is in this book. We love reading about it because Ian M. Banks writes action really, really well in creative ways. But yet all violence is the result of a failure in other areas. So again, it's sort of like we're conflicted. We want violence in some ways, and yet in other ways, maybe not so much. I don't know. I guess the last main character that we find in this storyline, in these set of chapters, is the drone partner of Dziedzma. His name is, I wrote this down somewhere, Skaffen Amtiskor. Again, strange names in this book. And I can't really help but think that the ship's minds and the drones in Ian M. Banks' culture novels are reflections of his own playful side, of his own personality, because they're often the most interesting and amusing and likable characters. And I can always see sort of like, I can see this is like the reflection of the author here as well. And Skaffen, whatever his name is, he hangs about and he makes jokes and quips and he gets on people's nerves, and pretty much every time you're reading him, he's like a scene stealer. I gotta say, if you can have a scene stealer in a book. So I get the feeling he could have actually done a lot more in the book and had a lot bigger role. But I think in doing that, he would have sort of encroached too much on the main character, which is Zakalwi. Very much Zakalwi is the main character, and it's his story. And I think if they'd have had too much of the ship's minds and too much of the drones in this book, it would have just got in the way of Zakalvi's journey. So while I do actually want to read more of the drones, and I want to read more of the ship's minds, because those are the real comedic side of things here, I think keeping those, you know, in moderation in this book is a good thing. Because, like, you read about the contact ships, and they all have funny names as well, because, they choose their own names. So in this book, I actually made a note of some of these. So you've got the special circumstances contact ship called Just Testing, which is great. And there's a ship called Size Isn't Everything, and this spaceship is 80 kilometers long. And there's a rescue ship called the Congenital Optimist. And of course the ship's like called Very Little Gravitas Indeed, which, and the gravitas names are very much a running joke with the ships in the culture. I've never actually got to the bottom of it, but it is quite fun there as well. Because you've got like these ships, and they just get up to all kinds of stuff, and they have the best lines, and so do the drones. In this book, there's this one ship who he decides he doesn't like just being a disembodied voice talking to the crew. So he embodies his personality into this small furry animal, and he communicates with his human passengers in that way, and he wants hugs and kisses, and he burrows into the cleavages of the female crew. And it's all good stuff. But again, you don't get as much of that as you do in some other contact novels. But like I say, it's a good thing. So the forward running story is, I don't know, good fun. Lots of espionage and politics and lots of chases and assassinations and like military battles and maneuvers and stuff like that. It's like a lot of contrast from chapter to chapter within the story as well, because it takes you in lots of different directions as well. But also it's a massive contrast between like the more darker, introspective chapters that head in the opposite direction, the backwards in time chapters that concentrate purely on Zakalwa's previous life. And they weave together in quite a lot of interesting ways, and they reflect different aspects of Zakalwa's life. For example, there's this on one of the Roman numeral backwards in time chapters, we're told that Zakalwi sort of goes on this sabbatical and he decides, I'm going to write poetry. And of course he discovers that he really isn't a poet. And then in a following chapter, he picks up, and it sort of picks up just halfway through some action. And it begins, actually, I put a note in here as well. So chapter 10. And after him failing as a poet a few chapters before, it goes like this. He loved the plasma rifle. He was an artist with it. He could paint pictures of destruction, compose symphonies of demolition, write elegies of annihilation using that weapon. And again, it just shows that he is not an artist of words. He is an artist of use of weapons. I guess it pretty much just says it right there. But they reflect each other. It really does. And it just happens time and time and time through the book that they sort of reference each other in subtle ways. He's not thinking, but at that point, he's not thinking back to being a poet. But we've just read that a few chapters before. So we're thinking back to him being a poet and the reflections and the conflicts that he has in his mind there. So, yeah, pretty cool there. I really like the interplay between the forward and the backwards in time chapters there as well. So what else have I talked about here? Looking at my notes. Story, a bit about characters, technology. I don't really want to talk too much about the technology in the book, really, because it's like culture technology. But the cool thing is, actually, here's something cool about this. It's quite unique that there's different levels of technology available to the main character throughout the book. Sometimes it's because he's inside the culture, and sometimes he's working outside the culture. And other times that the culture has decided that Zakhari can't use, he's not allowed to use any advanced technologies or anything like that. So sometimes he could have invisible spaceships and body armor, which is amazing. And later he has to do with like paper maps and shoddy radios and crappy tanks and random soldiers and things like that. And these changes don't actually feel forced, because often when it happens all the time, it's the convention in films, you know, it's sort of like someone picks up their mobile phone and it's something like, damn, I can't use my mobile phone, no connection. It's only there because the person has to be isolated in some way. Where in this book, you think, no, you can see why he's isolated, because he's chosen not to go in with this technology. He's chosen it himself, or the culture has chosen that he's not allowed to use this technology in this situation, or this has happened, or that has happened. And it just flows seamlessly from one sort of level of technology to another, unlike the sort of, oh, no mobile phone reception, which happens so much in other fiction, I guess. What else was I wanting to say about this? Yeah, one theme I liked, I guess, is, you know, the who is in the society is responsible for horrific events that are carried out in the name of society. Because the fear of most civilizations, or that you see outside of the culture, is that everything looks great on the outside, but when you dig deeper within, you find that the government is controlling things on the inside, and they're doing all the dark stuff and doing the nasty stuff on the inside. Or maybe that's the fear of these outside civilizations. But the culture is like the mirror image of that. Or that's what it's sort of being portrayed as here, because the inside, the actual core of the culture, doesn't have the government. It's sort of like this freewheeling society that can do whatever it wants and is good, you know, overall good. And you can see that whenever you're not at the edges. So instead of the centre, the controlling centre of the culture being bad, it's on the edges, again, that butts up against these other civilizations. That's where all the sort of violence takes place, and that's sort of like the violent edges. So if you actually set an entire culture book fully within the culture, it'd probably either be deadly boring or just another kind of science fiction entirely. You always need these sort of outside influences just to bring it in. So if the whole galaxy was like this, would there be any of this violence? I don't know, but it's one of those things that sort of those is it, whereabouts is the responsibility lying? Is it about the culture butting heads with other people? And if they weren't that way, you know, how would it go? I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but it's a very interesting to read about this kind of thing in this book. So, everything I liked about the book, is there anything I didn't like about it? Well, in a word, not really. I'm really struggling to find stuff in the book that I didn't think were, I wouldn't say perfect, but anything like too much less than perfect. I took a long time to read it, I guess, but it wasn't because I was having trouble reading it. It's because I just wanted to take it slow, because I remember being a bit confused about it last time I read the book 10 years ago. But also the alternating structure, you know, the different chapters, it made it very easy just to read it one chapter at a time. So I'd pick it up, I'd read one chapter, and then because the story didn't immediately continue in the next chapter, I'd just, you know, close the book and put it down again. And then next time I'd pick it up, I'd read one chapter and put it down again. I don't think that's a good thing in a book, because often you want a real page turner that you get to the end of the chapter and it's like, yeah, get on to the next one. And in this book, it didn't really do it for me. But then again, I actually think this let me enjoy the book more than otherwise, because every time I finish a chapter, I'd put the book down and then I'd think about it and it'd clear up in my head, and I'd like think a lot more on the things that, what was confusing about this? Why is he doing this? Why is he not doing this? Is it something we haven't found out about? Is it something, you know, that we haven't found out about in the other storyline yet? And just thinking about it on that book, on the book like that, is it was a unique reading experience, but one I actually really, really enjoyed. So that's probably one of my only criticisms, that the pacing isn't like up to the pacing of his other books, which you just start reading. It's like flip the page, flip the page, flip the page, flip the page. And here it was more of like, okay, just a steady pace, reading it over about 10 days or so. But again, I don't think that's bad about the book. It's just something that makes it slightly less than perfect. And again, I would have liked to have seen more of the culture in there, more of the drones and some more interesting characters. But again, it's like, if those were in there, it would have taken away from the main site. So I think it's like an expertly crafted, expertly written, expert characterization, expertly crafted technology-wise. All the rules were there. There was nothing that I thought there was a plot hole or anything that I can find in other books. So I'm going to have to give this book a really high rating because I just enjoyed it so much. I'm not saying it's the best science fiction book I've ever read, but out of all the books that I've read so far, this stands out as definitely the most enjoyable. I thought not just enjoyable on sort of like, hey, I thought it was a good book, but I just like chewing things over and reading it. You know, just the experience of reading it I thought was actually really good. So my purely subjective rating, I'm going to give this 5 stars because it's the first 5-star book I've read so far this year. 26, 25 books in and I've read my first 5-star book. But I guess if this is your first Ian M. Banks book, you probably won't find it a 5-star book. Actually, don't read this as your first Ian M. Banks book. Read them more in order, or read Player of Games first, or some of the other sort of lighter books first, because you'll get a much better sort of view of what Ian M. Banks' writing is normally about. This is definitely one of his more complex novels. I haven't read Matter, but I've heard that that's also quite a complex book about the same level as this. So I'm looking forward to that one too. But anyway, yeah, 5 stars. Why not? Again, if you've got anything to say about why you don't think it should be a 5-star book, or if you read it and you completely disagree with me, send me an email. Point out what you didn't like in the book. Maybe you didn't like the twist at the end. Again, the first time I read the book, I really didn't like it. I wasn't quite sure what was going on. But this time, it really does go. It's a book which, on the second reading, I think it's a 5-star book, whereas on the first reading, I would have given it maybe 3 stars or something, just because I didn't enjoy it so much then. Anyway, so there you go. 5-star book. Wow, who'd have thought it? Next book I'm reading or reviewing. I'm actually started reading it now. I've started last night. I'm about like 9 chapters in already or something. Is Red Thunder by John Varley. And this is a real page turner, as I said, you know, just flick through it page after page. Nothing has actually happened in the book yet, or nothing of note seems to have happened in the book, like 7, 8, 9 chapters in. But I think I'm going to maybe enjoy it. I'm not sure. I'll see how it turns out. I'm actually flying to Paris and then Naples tomorrow, and I'm going to do a gig on a cruise ship to Turkey. I'm going to Turkey, which I've never been there before, which is pretty cool, which means I'll probably finish this Red Thunder book probably by tomorrow evening, because it is a page turner. I've got quite a long journey. So I'll record another review tomorrow, or I guess Sunday, but I won't be uploading it, because when you're on a cruise ship, if you've never been on a cruise ship before, internet access is generally around about $75 per minute. And to upload on a like a dodgy satellite connection will probably cost me around about €50. So that's not going to happen. Not going to happen. Other books but I'm going to take with me, though, to read. I'm going to read probably Down the Bright Way by Robert Reed, and that's a follow-up to Marrow, which I reviewed earlier this year. Also, Snow Crash by Neil Stevenson, which is recommended by the Geek Nights podcast book club. I've read more other Neil Stevenson books before, and normally it's okay, so I've not read this one, so I will do that. Also, The Dreaming Void, which is like another, so it's another first part of a trilogy by Peter F. Hamilton. So that's a more recent one. I think that was only released last year as well. I just bought that at a shop the other day. So yeah, I'm looking forward to these books, and I'll be reading them over the coming weeks. So send in your emails, luke@juggler.net. Send in your recommendations. This book here, everyone was going, hey, read more Ian M. Banks. So out of you know, popularity of Ian M. Banks, there was my review. Also, check out the wiki at sfbrp.com and add book suggestions there. That's very simple to do. And thanks for listening. I think that's about it. Catch you later.